You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Whether you're gifting, decorating, or treating yourself, Lowe's December Deal Drops are here to help you save more all month long. Get up to 50% off select holiday decor. Plus, get up to 45% off select tools and accessories. Shop new December Deal Drops every week this month and get so much more out of your holidays. Lowe's. We help. You save. Selection varies by location while supplies last.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Obviously, I just chose to be different, was willing to be ridiculed by other people, just did not care, just wanted to be focused and always being competitive with myself.
Never quit radio. All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys so much for listening and watching, and please don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button wherever you're getting this show. So today, before we kick it off with our very special guest, let's do our usual and get that Patreon question of the week. And this week, we've got, if you could only do one exercise for the rest of your life, what would that be?
Oh, man.
Kind of a perfect question for this podcast.
Yeah. I guess I'd have to do burpees.
Are you... you mean like a real exercise, not just like walking?
I'm like walking?
Yeah, because I'm like, if I'm doing curls all day, that ain't going to get it done. But if I can do a burpee, like that...
Full body.
That's a full body exercise. We know that it's definitely taxing.
Yeah.
But it'll prime you for life, you know, in my opinion.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
What about you?
I'm... literally the worst person to ask this question. Does swimming count?
Yeah.
I think if I were to stick to one, like, exercise, I think it would be swimming because I feel very comfortable in the water and it doesn't matter how old I am or crickety, I can do it.
What about you?
I'd probably stick to running. I just enjoy running the long distance, short distance, but... I mean, you can make any kind of workout from that if you do incline runs and
I mean, you can really fit in a lot of different types of running. Plus, it's just peaceful for me.
I'll have to go with rowing.
Ooh.
That'd probably be mine. Because it's not this is way you're beat up.
Yeah, you like to row.
I like to row. Swimming's good, though. But the water gets cold, depending on where you're at. So rowing, I feel like you get the best of both worlds being in the water.
Well, all right.
Good question.
Good question.
All right, man. Thank you for doing this. I'm excited to talk to you about your life, man, really. So the way we do it is like to introduce you, get into your backstory so the team can know where you're from. Because where you're at right now, they see that. And
yeah,
it's pretty much almost unattainable to most people. So where were you born? Where did you come from?
I was born in Seattle, Washington. Grew up there. Went to grade school, K through 12. And, I was an athlete my whole life. That's one thing that I can say. I was born in 79. So in the 80s, I believe that was like...
Back in the 1900s.
It was, but what a time to be alive during that moment. You know, as a youth, you saw greatness in front of you, like through the various athletes from track and field with Carl Lewis, you know, the decathlon guys like Dan O'Brien, to Jerry Rice, to Bo Jackson, who was like my favorite.
How about that guy?
Dude, insane.
Amazing.
Like insane. Could you imagine him today?
Superhuman.
Like for real, running walls and catching.
Up that wall. I'll never forget that.
Never forget it. And then being able to see, like, of course, Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
You know, and just American pride as well. You know, like I still remember during that moment in time how the Olympics was like a big deal.
Sure was.
For our country. And I just felt like even though things were, you know, difficult for certain people, certain times, you know, there was, you know, wars and stuff like that when I was growing up. But I just felt that we were always safe because we had people like yourself, you know, out there willing to, you know, go out there and protect our freedom. So, like, I was born in Seattle, Washington, graduated out of Rainier Beach High School. I won a state championship in 1998. Oh, my God, I can't believe I'm saying 1998.
How about that?
And I had a great teammate by the name of Jamal Crawford, who happened to play in the NBA for almost 20 years. I was able to then earn a Division I scholarship to the University of Denver, where I played all 4 years. I took a fifth year of education because I was majoring in business management and also IT.
Oh, check. That's early.
That's a good one to get into that early.
Yeah, especially around that time, back like in the 1999 era. But I was also able to see the rise and fall of the dot-coms.
Yeah.
Remember that?
And then obviously 9/11.
Yep.
Yeah.
I still remember that day, getting woken up by my teammates and like flipping on the TV and like, what's going on? Like, holy smokes, like how does that work? And, you know, a lot of things went on during college for me because, you know, I graduated high school in the spring of 98. That following year, that's when the whole Columbine thing happened.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very weird because I grew up in a rough part of Seattle, and that whole Rainier Valley area is still riddled with violence even today. My first high school dance, I know I'm like jumping around, but my first high school dance back in like 94, 95, ended up with my friend's brother getting shot in the face 6 times.
Oh my gosh.
About like 5 yards away from me. So then just having to like digest that, process that, and realize that violence is everywhere. You just have to play life with your eyes. Even when, you know, you're walking to school, you're not having your headphones up all the way and having to just scan everything. Cause I was a shoestring kid, you know, key kid, you know, at the age of 9, both my parents worked. So, you know, I had to be very aware. So just growing up in that environment and then obviously going to college, you know, it was quite interesting. You know, I Rainier Beach High School was one of those high schools that they would never predict you for having great scholastic achievement. A lot of dropouts, you know, a lot of gangs, a lot of problems. But I just chose to be different, was willing to be ridiculed by other people, just did not care, just wanted to be focused and always being competitive with myself. And I believe that's why I earned that scholarship to it was a private school. You know, University of Denver is kind of like the Ivy League of the West. Today, I believe tuition, room, and board is like 70 grand. So it's insane. But, you know, it got me out of that environment, got me into this new environment, didn't know a soul. I was the guy on the team that always had a chip on his shoulder, being 5'9", you know. You're the shortest guy on the team, pretty much. But I always wanted to be stronger. I wanted to be faster, and I just wanted to show more grit. So I always wanted to be leading at the front in all the workouts, all the drills. And I took no shit.
Well, let me ask you this. What kept you, what was your motivation for that? Because that's an easy route when you have that contained inside of you for violence.
Yeah.
And to get pulled in that direction. Instead, you went the sports route. What was the one thing that kept you focused on that part of it?
Do you have a role model or something?
Well, when I say play life with your eyes, I think it revolves around like seeing other people's life choices, life decisions, and realizing that you have choices and you have consequences. That person's choice to go ride with a gang ended up with one of himself getting thrown in jail or someone getting killed. So I'm like, I don't want any parts of that. So how about I just do this? Yeah, it may not be as favorable as or as cool to not smoke weed or drink or whatever, but I'm doing the other things. I'm still playing ball. I'm still finding my own way. And do you remember the late Len Bias? He was a basketball player that came out of, I believe it was Maryland, and he was drafted by the Boston Celtics. This guy was like LeBron James before LeBron. He was in some circles better than Jordan coming out of college, right? So he gets drafted. Hey, I'm just saying.
We're going to have to look that up.
Len Bias. He gets drafted by the Celtics. The night that he gets drafted, they throw a party for him. This guy's like I said, like imagine like a LeBron James, like just ripped, like just like buff, right? He decides to do cocaine once, dies.
Kills
like
that's that. Right, yeah. I know that story. Yep.
Oh my
So I remember during that time in the 80s, my mom was like, you know, the head of PTSA. She was very involved in all the schools that I went to. She was like, see, this is why you don't do drugs. You know, because that was back when D.A.R.E. was like a big deal. And she took that opportunity to like drill into my head. It was like, see, you want to play basketball? You want to be famous and this and that? Like, you don't do that stuff. So I believe like having my parents kind of like take advantage of those negative situations and just hammer it home, you know, really provided, you know, clarity as to, okay, don't, it's very simple. Just don't do that.
So you got a powerful mom.
Oh yeah. I mean, she's from a small town called Zachary, Louisiana. Yeah.
I was Cajun.
Yeah, I'm Cajun.
And we married into that.
Yeah, there you go. So
that's right. They don't mess around.
Don't mess around.
They'll throw some voodoo on you or if you get out of line. Looks
at you a certain way, you're like,
yeah, that.
You're putting your head down right away. Didn't have the belt too many times because I didn't need it. Like the look alone was like getting my ass whooped. But yeah, you know, overall, like I just really would observe things. I would just sit back and I feel like that's one of my secret weapons. I can observe like situations and have a level of discernment of like, and discipline to say, I know where that's going to lead me to, or maybe I don't, but it doesn't look favorable. So I'd rather choose this road.
That's huge to have that at that age, especially in the 80s and 90s, because everyone was trying to be a gangster. Even if they weren't, they dressed. Remember, we dressed like it.
Pants hanging off your butt.
Came, like, yeah, oh my and all God. That, all the movies that came out made that look sexy.
Yes.
From gangsters to gangbang, all across the board, all those movies, man.
Boys in the Hood, New Jack City.
I'm like the poster child of white private school girl, and I was listening to the gangster rap.
Oh, yeah.
I
mean, all that.
Everybody.
N.W.A., Eazy-E,
all
stuff.
It's like when all those cultures kind of collided together and everything opened up for us.
Wild.
Everybody listened to that.
And there's so many kids that got in trouble just for being, because they looked the part. But when it came time to actually doing the part, that was different.
That's when they got in real bad situations.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because
real gangsters show up.
Yeah, because exactly. And you're like, I just wear the blue because it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's like, nah, take your butt over there before you get.
I mean, how many kids went down because of that?
Oh, I'm sure quite a few.
Quite a few.
Or at least beat up.
Yep.
Yeah. Really bad, or, you know, got robbed just because of that. And I still think like, although it was horrible, it did offer you some real good street smarts that I think kids today don't have.
Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's because of the tech.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
They're too busy walking, literally walking like this, not paying attention to anything. And I'm like.
Can you imagine back in the 80s, 90s, if you'd have had your hair and looking down, you got rocked. I mean, they'd have just picked you apart.
First of all, they would have just snatched your phone.
Snatch your phone. That's what I'm talking about. They'd just
snatch it up. Like, break yourself.
Never
like,
saw right it going. Now. Yeah, break them down.
And you're like.
I think about it all the time now because I'm the same age as you. Okay. And I was singing songs. Like, now I'll hear them on, like, the 90s or whatever, 80s, 90s thing. And I'm singing along and I'm like, wait, what's it saying? And the words to it, like talking about all the drugs and sex and all of that kind of stuff. I mean, crazy stuff. I was singing those lyrics.
Oh, for sure.
But had no idea what I was talking about. Like, I've never done a drug in my life, but mm-hmm. I sang all the songs. I wore the clothes. I had posters of Tupac in my room.
Lyrical genius.
But I never did any of the actions. So it's crazy to think, like, nowadays when kids are so immersed in it, they do the actions. Mm-hmm. It's like they want to try what the song is saying.
Yeah.
But back then, you could almost live that double life of liking music. I mean, music was a huge thing because we didn't have the phones.
Right.
But you didn't act on what it was saying, what the words were saying.
I still feel like we had a better level of discernment. We also had parents that would put belt to us.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You know, I mean, if they caught us, I remember literally playing bad music in the house and parents came home. I already knew what time it was. I was like, yeah, this is not good. Like, I'm in trouble, you know, and as I should be, mm-hmm. you know, I feel like I said, those choices equal certain consequences.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's really why I believe, like, living in the '80s, you know, the '90s, like, really helped me at least. I mean, of course I'm going to always think that I grew up in the best era, but mm-hmm. I just think of like how society is currently. We're just now to the point where we know what a woman is.
Oh, gosh.
Like, that would have never happened.
Oh, yeah. You'd have been wrapped up in a jacket, thrown
for sure. Absolutely. So,
second guessing that.
You know, to even have that be a question, mm-hmm. I think, like I said, I'm just glad that I was alive, you know, during that time. Had certain foundational principles, you know, having parents that just took no mess, mm-hmm. you know, and not even like abusive. It was just, this is how it is. Don't make your life difficult. You know, like, why would any young man want to make his father prove to him who the man of the house is? That's stupid.
Yeah.
That's just the household I grew up in. Like, why would I?
Right.
I really want to challenge that.
Not gonna test him. Yeah.
Like, why do I want to test an adult?
Our parents, our dads were mean, dude.
Mm-hmm.
And our friends' parents were mean.
Mean, yeah. Yeah, they whip your ass even worse, the road, man. Like, then they call back.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, so college basketball, and you didn't get picked up for the pros.
Yeah, so that, oh, man. Like, so sophomore year, that's where things got weird. Got injured during preseason. Was having a really good preseason. And hyperextended this knee, hedging a screen. Things just happen. But at that moment, you're like, everything's starting to work out. And I know what this means. This is a four-week rehab going into season. My minutes are done. So let's just call it, man. Like, the season for you is going to be an uphill battle just to get in the lineup, in the rotation. So around that time, I'm like feeling a sense of entitlement and just starting to get really depressed. Alongside that, like, you know, any Division I athlete or even maybe Division II athletes or Division III athletes go through this. You're being told by coaches, whether it be head coaches, assistants, player development coaches, this is what you got to do to get more minutes. And you're doing those things over and over and over again. And you're not getting the reward, which is being in the game. And for me, it really hurt because I was watching our team lose. And I'm like, at least put me in. Like, what's good? It's not going to hurt anything. But let me get out there and contribute. Because I'm obviously contributing in practice. I'm doing the extra things. I'm watching film. If anything, I'm sitting on the bench so long that I can learn the game a lot faster. Because I'm understanding like strengths and weaknesses. I'm understanding all the intangibles, but I'm still athletic. You know, I'm still able to get it done. And when that wasn't happening, you know, after each home game, you know, they give you a couple pizzas and some, you know, a couple soft drinks, and they just say, all right, see you tomorrow. And I'm thinking, screw that. I'm just going to go run. Because if I just sat there for 40 minutes, I need to go get a workout in. So I just start running, and those runs got longer and longer and longer. And then tears start going down. Then you're just like, why am I even here in the first place? This is just not where I want to be. Like, I gave up other scholarships to go to this school, and it's just not working out. And, you know, it got really dark because around the time, like, I turned 21, I started drinking, and I never really did any of that. Like, growing up, I was more of a straight edge than anything. And then it just led to more demons coming out. Next thing you know, I'm like literally laying in the freaking street. Just like, just take it away. Just take this pain away. And it was almost like initially like, well, where did I even get this image from? It's like freaking the program.
Program, yeah.
It's like, all right, well, maybe it's like a funny thing.
then I was like, well, you know what? No one even cares about me anyway. No one cares. Like, obviously my teammates don't really care. My coaches don't care. The coaches are lying their butts off. They're leading me astray. Who cares? So after a couple of those attempts, you know, didn't work, I was like, well, maybe, just maybe, God has something for me. So I was able to kind of like it was like a switch. It was like, you're supposed to be here. You ain't going to like it, but just make the best of it. So then I just started making the best of it the, you know, best way I could, and just try to be a better student. Just wanted to make sure I graduated. I was actually happy that same spring our coach got fired. And I was like, oh man, like, you know, I'm going to go into my senior season and actually get a new coaching staff and actually prove myself. And that coach sat me down in his office. I'll never forget. He was just a very grunt and cuss, like old school type of dude. And he just said, I've watched your film. I watch you in spring workouts. I do not know why the last guy didn't play you, but here's what I need from you. And he just said, you're not going to start, but this is how you're going to contribute here, 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 and here. If you do these tasks, I will make sure not only you graduate, but I will get you into grad school. If that's the thing that you want, if you want to become a coach, you can coach here. And I got plenty of connections to get you, you know, possibly an assistant or head coaching job further down the road. But if you don't take on this responsibility, we're going to have a major problem because you're going to be a cancer to the team, and I can't have that.
Right.
So for him to actually acknowledge, you know, he just laid it out, and I was okay with it because that's a business as well. And being 22 years old at the time, you kind of realize, well, 21, yeah, 22, you realize, okay, I don't like it, but at least he's being honest. These other guys, they were jokers, man. Like, they were just, you know, they would blame the bench guys for the guys losing. And I'm like, you guys showed zero accountability. That's why you got fired. Yeah. But at least this guy's name was Terry Carroll. Coach Carroll was like, no, like, this is what I need from you. You do it. And I messed up a few times, you know, chasing women and stuff and showing up late to practice. And I
must part of that age, man. It happens.
I had to have it. It had to happen. They ran me hard. But I'll go back. The reason why I even have that, like, that fire and that competitive spirit is because I had a high school coach who's still at my high school today. His name is Mike Bethia. And back then, where you could actually get in the player's face, he was literally the black version of Bobby Knight.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh,
gosh.
I know exactly. On the
West Coast. A West Coast guy like Bobby Knight.
Dang.
Like, I mean, he'd hit you upside the head. Like, he'd throw a ball at you. He curse you out. He call you everything but a child of God, you know, like,
oh my God.
And, but you know what he did do? We had a kid that was homeless, got clothes from him. We had a kid that needed a ride. He gave him his car for prom. Like, he just did different things.
That's a great human being.
Yeah. So I was just on the phone with him a couple months ago because they had just won their, I believe it was their 10th state title.
Oh, wow.
And, I was like, man, like, how does it feel? He's like, you know what's even better, Phil? I was like, why? He goes, I've put almost 200 kids, black kids, into college at the Division I level, over $43 million of education. He's like, I helped these kids. And he was like, that's my mission. That was my goal, just to be able to get kids out of this situation, in a better situation. And, hell, they just did a huge renovation of our high school this year. It's like $230 million renovation. We were like the last Seattle public school to get funding, but he made it so, and he's got his own picture there now in the gym. And
as it should
but
be.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate to have guys like that, you know, love on me hard. And that's where going into college, you know, I did have that chip on my shoulder. I did have that fire. And although I wasn't playing the minutes that I felt I deserved, I was willing to take the constructive criticism, the honest criticism, the honest talk. I just couldn't deal with BS talk. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you're doing something and someone
can read that.
Yeah, I can just see it. I'm like, I'm not going to, I just can't vibe with it. But it told me a lot. Like, I need to have less victim entitlement. I need to just keep moving forward or just completely pivot away. And I would say after, you know, realizing what my options were my fourth year with a new coach, I was just more in tune with being present with my teammates
and figuring out like who's going to be my friend after I'm done with this. And lo and behold, I met my best friend, and he actually lives in Austin. And we've been boys to this day. I'm the godfather's kids, and we've been in each other's lives ever since. But yeah, and it was funny because I hated the guy when I, because we got recruited,
how it works, right?
We got recruited together playing the same position. So,
oh gosh.
so we were fighting over food. We were fighting over everything, you know, both only children. So yeah, so it all worked out, you know, I'd say in college. And during that fifth year, I was looking for identity, and I was in a, programming class. I was in a SQL 7 class, just programming. And I look over, and my friend Oscar was on his laptop, and he has like Ronnie Coleman, Jay Cutler, a few other guys on the screen.
That's gonna be my next question. How'd you go from a team sport to what you are now?
Yeah, so I'm literally like in a programming class, you know, just like what the heck's going on, and why are you always eating in class? You know, stinking up the room with tuna fish and broccoli and rice. And he's like, I'm into this bodybuilding stuff. And I'm like, man, I got Brooke Burke on my laptop screen, man. What's up with you? Like, right? I got the guys in the mankinis going on. What's going on? And he was like, well, you can come to the student gym. Because I've just been a varsity athlete my whole life, so I didn't really intermingle with the student body. So I went to train with him. And that's when I met a whole group of other individuals that were just, you know, into weightlifting and the camaraderie. You know, it's like Proverbs 27:17, you know, iron sharpens iron. You know, I'm like, man.
Sure does.
I'm like, I like that. I like the fact that you guys are just pushing each other and, you know, grabbing a shake afterwards and asking each other, like, you know, different questions of life. And so I gravitated toward that. I wasn't really willing to compete. I just loved making new friends.
How much were you weighing when you crossed over?
175.
Oh my God.
So I graduated high school at 155.
Were you a hard gainer? Or could you put weight on pretty easy?
I put weight on pretty quick.
Okay, check.
I got that freshman 15 just like that.
All right.
But I would say I was a hard gainer when I dedicated myself to bodybuilding. It took me about a year to get to that 200 pound.
That's the first tip, yeah, right? When you get over to, like, you're stuck at 195 forever, man.
I couldn't stand it, man. But, you know, your metabolism just on fire, yeah, dude. Yeah. I've been running my whole life.
Yeah.
Been doing drills and all this sort of stuff. So my body was like, no, it's cool. Like, you can lift this weight and stuff, but we're going to keep you lean. Like, your body remembers. Body keeps score, right? So it burns it right off. And then just the amount of food that you had to eat. I just was not, number one, I didn't have the money to eat like that. Number two, I didn't feel like I had the time. So when I found the time, I had to go get another job, because during my fifth year of school, you know, I wasn't playing hoops. So I got a job on campus. I was actually doing the school's website and web development and stuff. And then I started working at a bar, and I was just, you know, picking up, you know, doing everything I could just to get hours. And then they're like, hey, would you like to like work the doors at like a, you know, like, because the bar is called Jackson's Hole, is right off of 20th and Wazzy in Denver, Colorado, right across from Coors Field. So they get, you know, everybody coming in for the ball games and stuff. So I'm just like, I'll watch a gate. And they're like, hell yeah. Like, I'm like, wait a minute. You'll pay me to watch this gate as like a security guy to make sure no one runs out on a tab? And I'm making real money, cash money, every time I come out? They're like, yeah. I'm like, sold. So I would take that money. And I ended up finding out more bodybuilders, you know, that worked at this nightclub. And they, one of the guys actually worked for, do you remember the supplement company EAS?
Mm-hmm, of course.
Yeah. So they were out of Golden, Colorado.
Yeah.
Once a month they did an employee sale, and I used to take that money and I used to drive and wait outside. I'm talking about like club closed at like 2, get out of there by 3, grab something to eat. Next, you know, I'm just like, screw it. Why go home? I'm just going to drive right outside and just be like one of the first in line. I'll just sleep outside and wait till those doors go open up at 7 and be one of the first people to get in there, where I could buy like the little Myoplex Deluxe.
And I remember that.
So, and it was like pennies on the dollar back then.
Well,
so I'm thinking, well, I can maximize my, you know, my dollar's going to stretch. And that's really how I got into weightlifting, because I needed to understand, like, what do these supplements do?
I was going to, my next question, who taught you that? And how long did it take you to figure out how you work? No one, because people get discouraged. They're like, hey, this guy does this, I'm going to do this, and it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. I am just a creature of, give me that book and I'll read it. If I'm really passionate about it, which I was, I ended up actually going to that warehouse, and they had the, what was it called, the supplement review guide. Mm-hmm. So I just bought that, and I was like, I'm going to learn everything about every supplement. And then from that, now mind you, I'm still in college, so aside from studying and IT and business, I'm going up to the library trying to understand amino acids, because we didn't have like the internet how we have today, right? Mm-hmm. This is like in like 2003. So I just made sure that I was just affluent, like as much as possible. I just became extremely passionate, and I just read all day long. I would go to Barnes & Noble, read books. I would go get the magazines, and if I couldn't afford them, I'd just read them right there at 7-Eleven. I don't care. Right. I'm just scanning through it, like, okay, this is what this does. This is what this journalist was. A lot of bro science didn't exist back then. It was real journalists. Real science editors, you know, that had PhDs.
Right.
So you could believe what you're reading.
Yeah.
And that's really how I learned, and then just through trial and error.
What would you tell somebody now, looking back at yourself at that, when you're starting out, as opposed to who you are now? What would you tell if you'd be like, hey, do this?
I would tell them, do your best, if you're going to use social media, to look at experts first. People who have gone out and done it at a high level. And then you may find like a person who has written some books and stuff, but just, you know, you can, how do they say, trust but verify?
Right.
You really have to verify who these people are, because we see all the time now, I'm a guru, it's like, but where have you applied this?
Yeah.
And you're 20 years old and you're a guru, and it's kind of like things where, don't go together.
And what level? At what level? If this was your money, would you put your faith in some influencer to manage your dollars? No, because you know they're a scam artist. So I would tell a young Phil Heath or someone just coming up, like if they're in their early 20s, to just pick up a book like from back in the day. You can go on eBay and even grab some old school magazines. Just start reading about the history of it. Buy like some, like for me, I bought VHS and DVDs. People are like, what's a VHS?
Tape.
Right. But I bought all of them when I first started, because I wanted to understand like the champions, like Lee Haney. I bought every Mr. Olympia he competed in. So I needed to understand like, okay, this is the guy that won the most Mr. Olympias at the time. I need to understand what he looked like, who he beat, why did he win? And just play it with my eyes and be like, okay, so I can see this, I see that. All right, let me read these books. All right, cool. And then, you know, I give Bill Phillips from EAS a lot of credit, because he did that Body for Life thing.
Yeah.
And everybody was like holding up the newspaper, showing their abs off and stuff. So I decided on October 8th, 2002, I was still living in the basketball house. My teammates left, and I'm like, okay, cool. Grabbed a 1.8 megapixel camera, set it on the mantle, took my first photograph. So when I took that photograph, I was like, this is where I become a bodybuilder. I'm going to take a picture every week, and I'm going to review it myself. I'm going to print it out, and I'm going to dissect like where my weaknesses are, where my strengths are.
Okay, so that's when it happened. That's when
I crossed over. October 8, 2002. And I'm glad I took a picture for it, because I knew that I was intentionally focused on wanting to mark this date down and say, no more basketball. I'll still talk about it. I'll still love it. It's still part of who I am as a hooper and whatnot. But I can't do that anymore. But I have an opportunity to do this. Yeah.
And you knew that?
I just felt it in my bones, man. Like when you're going to bodybuilding shows and you're watching people compete, and then you tell yourself, there's no way I can do that. Well, I had a friend, his name is Josh Crandall. We were at a show, and the guest poser's name was Claude Gruel. Like, I think he was from Montreal, Canada. And he had just won the Masters Olympia. And we took a picture with him, and he didn't want to really hit a bicep shot with me. So I hit a bicep shot, and these kids are walking by like, holy crap, his arms are as big as Claude's. And Claude goes, you compete? And my boy Josh goes, no, man, he's a basketball player. He just got done playing summer league.
Oh my God.
Claude's like, you should really do this. Like, you should really do it. And I thought, whatever. So then Josh was like, Phil, this guy travels all around the world, you know, makes pretty damn good money, you know, doing this, and Josh was a bodybuilder, amateur. And he's like, that's what I want to do. And he's literally telling you, not me, like, you have the opportunity, you have the potential to do it. So
that's when I made that jump and I made that switch, and I didn't hire a coach or anything like that. I just trained with my friends and, you know, just kind of trial and error, you know, just kind of going through those magazines, taking pictures of yourself, being honest with yourself, and just never say, like you say, never say quit. You know, like people ask like your motivation. I'm just like, there's no quitting this, man. Like when I have my eyes set on something,
and you use other people for motivation. Like who are some of the prior Olympians that you were like, and why? How long were you in it before you started like, hey, I'm Mr. Olympia quality?
It didn't take long.
Okay.
So my first bodybuilding show was April 4th of 2003 in Boulder, Colorado. I won the whole show. I won the novice and the open overall. That was pretty wild because I didn't really know what the hell I was doing compared to what I know now.
Right.
And then I ended up doing the Mr. Colorado, it was like 2 months later, right after I graduated college. And I won my weight class, but not the overall. So then I was like, all right, I'm going to take a year off. I'm going to come back bigger, better, won the overall at the Mr. Colorado. So I became Mr. Colorado in 2004, and then ended up doing, literally 20 years ago, the Junior Nationals in Chicago, won the whole damn thing, was flown out by Joan Weider, did a Flex magazine shoot.
Had your first one?
Actually, I did a photo shoot a month prior to that Junior Nationals show in May, which was kind of unheard of back then. Like, you're kind of just a nobody that never has done a national show at all.
Yeah, but you make the cover of a magazine.
And you're doing a photo shoot and then another one after you win the juniors. And then that photo shoot, the second photo shoot was in, it was at the Chatsworth Powerhouse Gym. And I remember the late Peter McGuff, he was a senior editor at the time, and he said, make sure you bring gym shoes and gym shorts, like you were playing basketball. And I was like, oh, okay, we're just going to kind of like maybe like have me pose with a basketball and a dumbbell or something like that, you know, kind of tell the story. He goes, all right. I was like, am I going to shoot or dribble or how are we going to do this? He goes, no, you're going to dunk it like you did in college.
Oh, my gosh.
I said, man, I'm like, now I'm like 235. Rebounding after a contest, you know, full of water. And I'm looking at the photographer. His name is Robert Reef. I'll never forget. He was like, oh, well, I'll be right here. I was like, okay. I said, Peter, you're going to bounce this ball. You're going to pass it right here. And I'm going to take it. I'm going to slam this thing. Give me 5 minutes. And I'm like, oh my God, I got to do this warm up. So I'm doing like, we have like UCLA warm up drill. So I'm doing like every drill, like stretching, this and that, doing some sprints. I said, now pass me the ball, and I dunk it. What does the photographer say? You got to turn your body like this, no way. And you know,
oh my,
your facial expression has to change.
No, did you want to punch him in the face?
Yes, after like the 20th take. By that time, you're like, how about I just break the backboard? Just miss the whole thing, but just like try to rip the rim off. That'd be kind of cool, right? They're like, no, we want it from the side, like from the baseline going in. So it all worked out, though, because a month later, when I won the Mr. USA competition in Las Vegas, 20 years ago, right before I go on stage, they come to my hotel room and they go, here you go. You got the cover the night before you win. Or the day of you, like right before I go on stage, pretty much. And it had a fold-out poster of me dunking that damn thing.
That's cool.
That is still cool. Got it?
Oh, yeah. Still have the, yeah. And they did a super feature. It was like a 22-page. Yeah, it's that picture right there.
That is so cool.
That's the photo, dude. I was up there.
That is so cool.
I was up there, man. Yeah.
Okay, so in order to get into a Mr. Olympia, you have to win a competition, correct?
Yes, sir. So you have to win a competition. So I won. So in 2006, I did my pro debut in Denver, won that. A week later, I go to New York and win that one. So I'm qualified, but I chose to sit out because I just didn't feel like I was big enough. And, you know, I just needed to feel like I was, in a way, worthy of being on that stage and doing some damage. I just wanted to be a name that goes up there and gets waxed. I was humble enough to know, like, if I'm going to be even competitive or not. I'm just not one of those guys that's just, oh, I'm just happy to be here. So then 2007, I do the Arnold Classic and, I get fifth,
which still qualified me. But my coach, Hani Rambod, was like, hey, ask. I was working with Flex Magazine, Muscle Fitness, and also Metrics. So he was like, ask. I was like, dude, you want me to sit out again? He's like, yeah, but ask Metrics because they pay you more. And if they're cool with it, then I think the magazine will be okay.
Just so you can train?
Just so I can train.
Check.
So I was like, okay. So I asked, and they were like, yeah, cool. And then I had to literally fly to California, basically sit in the principal's office and kind of explain as to why I'm sitting out for the second year. So by that time, social media didn't really exist, you know, 07, but the websites were, the chat rooms were big. So it was like, Phil, he sits out for the second time. They had to run the story.
Right.
So I'm catching a lot of heat, a lot of hate. And I was just like, okay, I understand where people are at. They just are mad because they want to see me up there next to the best. And I went to that Olympia that year in 2007. I remember being in a, I went to the press conference and I had a couple athletes sitting on the panel talking trash to me.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
And I thought, this is perfect. I got their attention. This is a good thing. But the best part was during those 2 years, not only was I, building up my physique, I was building up my stage presence by going to guest pose at various competitions around the world, building my fan base while these guys are just hunkered down in the gym. There's no social media. So you've seen these guys, like they'll just wear a hoodie for like 12 weeks. Don't talk to anyone. I'm like, well, I'm going to go through every city in America and just develop a fan base that way.
And keep up with your training. That's got to be tough.
Keep up with my training. And then, like I said, the stage presence, you know, I needed more stage time.
Yeah.
And being able to be like off season shape and be on stage, you know, was great for me because I could try different poses. I could just try anything and people are going to clap. You know, it's not like today where, if a person came in like 12 weeks out, you know, they're expecting the finished product every time you open up your social media.
Sure.
So you don't see people guest pose anymore. But back then, people were just happy that you went to their, you know, went to their town. It's like me flying from Denver, Colorado to Kalamazoo, Michigan, or, you know, or Jackson, Mississippi. You know, like people are like, man, he made this trip. Holy smokes. Like, or me going to Kadena Air Force Base, you know, guest posing there for the troops. Like I did all that stuff and I was just very much in gratitude of just being able to have that opportunity where bodybuilding could just get me in these other places while it would still serve me to get that stage presence down so that when I did compete at the Olympia in 2008, I got third.
That was your first one?
That was my first one.
Did Jay have that?
Jay actually.
Or was that Dexter?
Yep. Jay lost to
That's
Dexter.
That's the year because he won the year before, right?
Yeah. He won the year before in 07.
Y'all buddies?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're all
He
friends.
Seems like a real, I don't know him, but he seems like a great guy.
No, Jay's awesome.
Okay.
Yeah, Jay's actually the one who I met at my very first amateur show.
Right.
And my boy Josh was like, hey, go, that's the guest poser. You need to go up to him. He's like coaching me up, you know. You need to go up to him and ask to take a picture. I was like, oh, like what I did with Claude? He goes, yeah, but this guy's a lot bigger. So I go up to Jay and I'm thinking like, what do I say? And I go, Mr. Cutler, do you mind if I take a picture with you? He said, yeah, no problem. I said, what's your weight? You know, I'm 290.
I was going to say almost 300, right?
And I go, well, I'm 190. Now what? You know, I didn't know what else to say, you know? So we take this photo and it's so amazing how God works. It's like we meet, we take this photo and become best of friends.
Yeah.
And I ended up being the one where after he did lose to Dexter, he came back in 09 and whipped all our butts.
Well, When that sucker did that quad stomp on the stage in 09,
it was, bro.
It was unbelievable.
I'm telling you what, that year, I ended up getting sick with food poisoning that Thursday night after the meet and greet. We were being coached by Hani Rambod the year prior when Jay lost. I got third, and I told Hani, I said, you know, you should coach Jay. And he was like, why would you do that? Like, I said, well, he's my boy, you know? Like, he's like, yeah, but this is business. This is competition. Like, you can be okay with it? I was like, well, I see what you'd be able to do for me. I mean, if you can help him out, that's just going to make me better anyway. So get to eat those words. I mean, not only they do well, but he came out with that quad stomp. Like you said,
dominated.
The man was so wide that year. It looked like his head shrunk.
It did, right? And it looked like
it just looked like his head shrunk and everything else got bigger. And I remember going up to him in his hotel room, and I kid you not, he couldn't fit through the door. he turned sideways. And I was like, bro.
Is that right?
Like, and I'm sick. I was like, hey, I'm gonna just keep my distance. I was like, this is over. I was like, congratulations. He's like, oh no, you're gonna be up there too. I was like, no. Like I spent all last night throwing up, man. Like, this is all you. But I got to witness history, you know, obviously in 08, watching Dexter win, Jay lose, see the reemergence of Jay. I think that show in 09 is what people remember him for,
right?
The resilience,
yeah.
You know, as a real champion, you know, getting knocked down, maybe wanting to quit, but deciding like that's not going to happen. And just, I mean, he shocked the world. And
he completely changed.
He changed his haircut. He changed his swagger. He changed his physique. And he was actually like 15 to 20 pounds less, which made him look even better, which was just so dope. But yeah.
Every time he won, he never looked like he was excited about it to me.
Yeah, very monotone. Like, just very
okay,
like.
Okay, yeah. That's not just me, right? He just kind of looks like he's like, yay.
Bruh. He just.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen Jay ever like really jump up in joy.
Oh, so that's just his style.
I just think it's his style. Not too high, not too low, just very chill. But in gratitude for all of it, I know that he's I'm excited for him because of him having his brands, you know, with the clothing and the supplements and a bunch of other endeavors, but him doing a podcast, you know, you get to see and hear, you know, like more of his passion behind the sport. He's always going to kind of, you know, be a little bit reserved, I think.
Yeah. That's all right.
Which I think is okay. I think you should keep some to yourself, but you could tell that he loves bodybuilding. You could tell he loves the people within it. And he's always been one that wants to provide value to others. So I love that part about him.
So you came in at 11.
Oh, yeah. That was wild. That was a wild year, man.
Tell me about that.
So 2011, I just knew that it wasn't just the physique. It had to be just the aura. It had to be the energy.
Because you changed the way everybody looks.
Yeah. So you have to think, like, for me, I was like, the mindset of a champion realizes that there's a path to the unknown, right? You climb this mountaintop. Who's up here? Just you, really. And you got to be aware of, like, everybody then wanting to come after you thereafter. The expectations are going to, you know, the micro lens is going to sharpen up a little bit. It's going to get magnified harder. You know, the judge is going to look at you different. The fans are going to look at you different. The sponsor is going to look at you different. And I just thought, well, I sign up for that. So going into 2011, I knew, because I was able to see Ronnie win 8, him lose to Jay, Jay lose to Dexter, then come back and win. So I got to see three Mr. Olympias, how they were treated by the public and in the private. And that was really, like, at first, like, even as I take a deep breath now, I'm like, man, that was tough to digest because people talk trash about you that are judges, that are promoters, that are people that pay these guys, and then they just love the next dude. And I was like, Phil, you're gonna have to deal with that. And I was like, all right, well, I can be of the world. I could be with the man upstairs. So I'll just roll with him. So
it actually says you're supposed to do that anyways.
For real. But you lose sight of that because bodybuilding really is about validation in a way. You got a panel of judges that validate your hard work and dedication through placement of who's first to last.
Well, they're designed to pick you apart.
And it's the only sport that they do that about how you look. It's not about how you feel or what speech you
gave. Don't give a damn about that.
They don't give a damn about none of that. It's just like, oh, we don't like that.
And all of y'all look phenomenal. Just to be on the stage is unbelievable, but it doesn't matter. Like, you're going up there to get picked apart.
100%. And no one wants to be judged like that. Like, I don't care who you are. Like, but when you sign up for that, you still don't want to be judged for, like, that one little
that's
thing.
That's human condition,
you're like,
man.
No, I don't want, like, what, but look at the scratch on that car over there. Yeah. You know, not over here. Like, look at all of us, right? So, yeah, that part, you know, was very difficult. But then I just, like I said, I just signed up for it. So then in 2011, I just went up there and was like, this is mine. I declare it. I did the work. Give it to me.
Yeah, you crushed it.
And then, you know, I'll tell you, like, when they announced my name, it was like my life went all the way back to, like, a very small child and all the different whys in the road. All of those decisions and, like, crazy synapses, like, and then it brought me back. And then it, like, it was like God was like, now you see? It made sense. And that's when the tears are just, because you're just like, okay, it all, okay, I get it. But now I gotta try to retain this damn thing.
Which is harder, right?
Yeah, I had to actually do 3 days of photo shoots, get on a flight to India and go defend that title, actually win another title in India with the same group that I just beat the previous week that want to get some get back. So you don't want it to be a fluke, right?
Yeah.
So you're always like, you're chasing greatness while you're being chased by other people. So your goal is to try to figure out who you are, so therefore you can create distance. Because they're also trying to figure out who they are too. And maybe they kind of have, but you have to make sure that you really know who you are. You got to know your strengths and weaknesses. You got to know those blind spots where someone can come get you. And I would always tell myself, like, on my worst day, I have to make that day the best day in the gym. On my worst day, I have to stay on top with the diet on my worst day. The best days, now, usually 80% of your life is pretty damn good.
Right. So that's the growth day.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you know it's a growth day, is when it's when you're 100%. Struggling, right?
Yeah, when something really bad happens. Like, I'm trying to think, like 11 years ago, my dad died the night that I was guest posing in Cleveland, Ohio, and I get the call, and he died at 64, and I already knew that he had this rare blood disease called amyloidosis.
Oh yeah.
And you know, I would always like every week and a half I would visit in Seattle just to go be at his bedside, be like, all right, Pop, like I'm here hanging. Tell me a story. Tell me what's going on. And I didn't really grow up with my biological father, but we reconnected during that period of time. And he was given like 4 or 5 months, made it over a year. So I was thankful for that, right? But then I'm in this car after I just had like great guest posing. I'm like, man, like I felt good. And then usually after you pose, they put a microphone in your hand. So usually you're winded. Hmm. I wasn't winded at all. Like the words just flowed. Like everything was, the energy was great. The crowd like actually stood up and was applauding. And I get in the car and was told like, yep, your dad passed away tonight. And I was like, okay. Thinking to myself, all right, I'm getting ready to go back to the host hotel where I got to get cleaned up and go meet with 100 people that paid to do a VIP dinner. Fantastic, you know? And I remember going into the room and thinking, all right, it's like how most people think, let me go on Facebook and go share my feelings. And I was like, that's not going to happen. They don't need to know this pain. I don't even know what this feels like. I've never lost a parent before. So you stare in the mirror and you're like, do I have tears? Am I trying to force them out? And I was like, how about you just be? So I went in the shower, I was just like getting all this tanning and oil off and stuff, you know? And I'm like, I don't really hear anything other than a whisper of saying, go to work. I just keep hearing, and it was like my dad saying, just go to work. Because he's a proud Texan. I buried him in Arlington. And he would always say, you know, if I could put 2 feet on the ground, lace them up, I can go to work. He's like, go to work. You got people. So I just made that happen. And I felt like there was moments like that that were like growth moments as well. Like not just on the stage, but off the stage. And that's what led me to believe that I was going to always be a champion, because I was willing to go through those moments and realize that I'm not alone. Like everybody loses a parent. Everybody loses a loved one. Everybody loses a job or something that, you know, like, but I had these different moments. And I was like, I kept telling myself, I'm like, God, you really have a story for me. Let me get on my knees right now and just thank you, because
there's going to be this in every cool story. It can't just be sunshine and rainbows.
Nobody wants that.
Yeah.
Nobody wants that.
To hear just a great story.
I don't think even us, like, we don't want, like,
no.
That's pretty boring.
Yeah, man, you don't want that.
Basic, right? So just having those moments and knowing that, wow, that's a relatable experience, I think, for a lot of people. You know, everybody's had loss while still trying to manage life. Like, oh, I got a family to feed. I got obligations. And then all you want to do is just like pump the brakes and just be. It's like, nope, sorry. This is the life you chose, man. Show must go on. You know, it must go on.
So you've won Mr. Olympia 7 times.
Yes, sir.
That's amazing.
That's insane.
That's unbelievable.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You earned that.
No, I'm having a hard time embracing that.
Hadn't set in yet.
Like hearing like people like yourself say this.
You know how hard that is?
Yeah, like I'm now because I commentate.
Do you really? I think it's kind of going over you because I don't think you do, man. Because it's unbelievable that you did that.
I appreciate it, brother. Like I'll talk about it. Like, oh yeah, I won the Olympia 7 years in a row, and it was a 2-day comp, and no one's ever done that. But that's more like almost like a phrase of words and stuff. It's just like, yeah, when I sit down now and I do some performance coaching and motivational speaking, but then when I just sit down and I write, sometimes I'm like, or I see like a video montage that a fan made or one of my, you know, videographers made, you just sit there in gratitude because I put in the work and I had no training partner for all those years. I had the best training partner, but it was like, I don't even know how I did it, dude.
What was your most difficult Olympia?
I think, I know I had like 3 that were really hard. One was 2012 because,
oh really?
Because you're trying to defend a title.
Yeah. Oh, I guess. Yeah.
So
sure.
You're like, I don't want to, I love you, Dexter, but I didn't want to just be one time.
Right. Right.
And we were filming Generation Iron.
Check.
So I'm like,
great show.
I don't want to be dethroned on a film.
Right.
So, so I had that added pressure on myself.
All right, check.
And then that following year, getting ready for 13, training-wise, like emotionally, 2012 was very tough. Physically, 2013 was tough because I made it tough. I was like, I've got to take what I've learned in 2011 and 2012. I need to merge both of these physiques because one was more aesthetic, one was a little bit more dense. How can I just merge the two? And I was like, you're going to maybe take a few less appearances, you're going to stay your butt home. And if you do travel, you're going to be very meticulous as to gym time, meal prep time. Like I'm the type of guy that doesn't really ask for a whole lot. I do like nice hotel rooms and of course, you know, nice travel, but like, hey, I need you to make sure I've got, you know, 3 gallons of water in my room and meal prep like sky high and stuff. I'm just like, I'll just figure it out, you know? But no, I was like, nope, this is how it has to be. And every day was freaking war in that gym. And because I felt like I needed to create some distance. So 2013, I was rewarded by, I looked the best I ever looked. Yeah. And I had one call out on that Friday night prejudging. It was over. It was like Mike Tyson, like knocking the guy out in the first round. I got to go into Saturday knowing that all I got to do is not screw this up. And it was mine. I would say those two. 2017 was really tough.
Yeah.
2017 was really tough because I knew that there's a bodybuilding Mount Rushmore in my mind. Got Lee Haney, Ronnie Coleman, and Arnold. And at the time I have 6. So I'm tied with Dorian. But if the prophecy in my mind is that I'm going to win 10 of these things, I must win at least this one. So at the very least, I'm tied with Arnold.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
And I remember seeing Arnold at his show in Columbus, and I pull him aside, and we don't have, especially back then, like we didn't have like a bad relationship or anything like that. It's just hard to get time with him.
Sure.
He's very busy. So I just pull him aside. I was like, we're all here for you. We're all motivated by you. We all know the beyond the movie lines. We know the impact. And you've impacted me, and I'd be honored to be a 7-time Mr. Olympia champion. And I'm going to be working my tail off to make sure that happens. And he just gave me that look like a dad would and grabbed me by the shoulders and like shook me and just walked away. And I was like, I got the nod.
It's going to be fantastic.
I'm good. Like I'm like, oh, crap. Now I got to really train. You know, like it's one thing to say these things and have this emotional experience, but you got to do the freaking work. So I was doing that work, and halfway through the prep, I realized that I have a really nasty hernia going on. And I'm looking around, and I'm like, I've got to fight through this. I can't quit now. I'm already in the pocket. Maybe no one notices or whatever, but according to my wife, like I was in pain every night. I was crying in my sleep. I had diastasis recti, ab separated. I had intestinal strangulation. I was bleeding through my colon. Hmm. So I had to go in there and do some major work. So like when I would pose and I would squeeze, like it would just hurt. And I would feel like if I did like a plank, I knew that my intestines were trying to force themselves down. So gravity was like, uh-uh. Like I have no, there's like very weak fascia around this area. Cause I grew up, when I was born, I had a hernia. Mm-hmm. So my parents got it repaired at 3, but later realized that it should have been like 5 or 6. Cause the body still hadn't generated enough fascia around that, you know, around that area. So it truly never really healed, but I'm sure, you know, my parents didn't think I was going to, get to 280 pounds in off season and be a bodybuilder, you know? So I would have been more safe at, 180 playing hoops, right? So, that happened. But winning the 7th title, I just knew, I was like, no matter what happens, I'm going to be immortalized in history. It's going to take a great effort, because I knew what it took for me just to get here. It's going to take a really special individual who has the mindset more than just the muscles that are going to be able to win a 2-day Mr. Olympia contest 7 times in a row, or at least if he were to lose, that's a whole beyond a decade of like badassery. So I'm in great company. And, after I get off stage, my wife's like, I've got you booked for emergency surgery next week in Cleveland. I'm like, okay. And then that happens. And then I'm like, so what can I do, doctor? Like, well, you have to walk like for an hour after your surgery. It'll just be 25 minutes. It was 2 hours and 30 minutes because I had all those problems.
Right. Yeah. So I've always wanted, if I had a chance to talk to you, I wanted to ask you these questions. I just got 2.
Yeah, of course.
And then we'll go into what you're doing now. And I know you came off the stage in 2017. My first question is, there's 2 men that have more than you.
Yep.
Lee Haney.
And Ronnie. Yep.
But they're tied.
Mm-hmm.
But Lee was first.
Yes.
So is he Zeus? Do y'all call him that?
No. I think you look at Ronnie as like, I mean, shout out to Lee Haney. I mean, he's great physique, great champion. One of our favorites, because what I appreciate about Lee is that he was the first to win 8.
Right.
But to me, at some point, you want to know how they did it, what they stood for as a character, not just the talent. Obviously, he was extremely talented, but his character, God-fearing man, husband, father, and now grandfather. Business owner, and just so happened to win 8 Mr. Olympias. That's pretty badass resume,
man.
Same wife. Been knowing each other since they were toddlers.
Little, right? Yeah,
like very little. So it's you on paper. You kind of want to aspire to that. Mm-hmm. So I look at that. I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool. And I get to travel with Lee, you know, doing some appearances together.
Yeah, tell him I said hello.
I will.
I never met him, but
no, he's awesome. But then you have Ronnie. And I believe like champions have this thing of, it's not just what we won, but it's how we made you feel. And how Ronnie made us all feel. we all felt strong. Yeah. We all say, yeah, buddy. And we all say, lightweight, baby. And we go in there and we smash the gym. And I love his humility, because even through all the surgeries that he's had,
yeah,
he still travels the world.
His cop.
Yeah.
He huge. Did. That mass monster era when Dorian came online and changed everything.
Changed everything. Kind of screwed it up for guys like me.
Oh, my God.
I had to find my own lane, you know? I'm like, I don't know if I could ever be that.
He changed everything. Okay, so my second question is this. Build me an Olympian. Build me a Mr. Olympia from the start to 2025. Let's start with calves.
Well, they say that's a genetic body part. I think that that's something that, you know, we have to take into account, but it has to go through hell, because 70% of your body weight is on that lower leg, right? So we have to train that at least 2, if not 3 days a week. You got to also train that Achilles, you know, you got to do a lot of stretching movements and such.
Who has the best calves?
Oh, okay.
Oh, if you were to take,
if I was going to take, gotcha, I want gotcha, you to gotcha, take gotcha, gotcha. Each individual so body part. We're going to start with the calves.
Ooh. Oh man.
I think about this all the time when I watch y'all's history.
Best calves. Arnold had really good calves.
I think it's between you and Dorian.
But I think it's me and Dorian, I think, as far as Olympia champions, like,
right?
I think it's Dorian and myself, yeah, for calves.
Okay, let's go to quads.
Quads, you got Jay. Ronnie's were ginormous, dude. So I don't know if, like, just, yeah, if I had Ronnie's quads, yeah,
it would just be like. Have you ever met Tom Platz?
I met Tom Platz.
Are they as,
back in the day, yeah.
They were, right?
They're massive.
Quadzilla?
Yeah, but. I think with, like, when you, like, I saw Ronnie, like, when he won his 8th, I was at the show, and you're doing this.
Oh, like that, huh?
You start laughing. You're just like, man, I love you, Jay, but, like, those quads, like, it's just stupid. Like, it's crazy. And then you go to a photo shoot, and you're like, some things don't make any sense. It's, right. It's like I had my bodybuilding show last weekend in Arlington. And I was just talking, and I always end up making a Ronnie reference. And I was like, you know, it's funny how we talk about God on the first day, 7th day. And he said, on the 8th day, he made Ronnie Coleman.
Ronnie Coleman? I heard that, yeah.
Yeah. On the 8th day, they made Ronnie Coleman, yeah. Man, because that is just, but he worked at it. He worked for those quads, sure, and did. He knew that he did. So, yeah, you got to go with the quads with him.
All right, what about abs?
Abs, Sean Ray all day.
Ray?
Sean Ray. I loved his abdominals.
What about Roden? God rest his soul.
Yeah, Sean Ray's was just like, just from every side.
All right?
Yeah.
All right, chest.
I'd go with Coleman.
Over Arnold?
You have to throw yourself in there.
We're getting to him.
You know, I was thinking about Arnold, right? But I thought about Coleman when he flexed it.
Yeah, because it had that.
It just
looked like seashells.
Yeah, yeah, it was just wild.
Oh gosh. If you can't tell, Marcus watches y'all's videos all the time. It's funny,
I tried out for Mr. Olympia. I make it.
It's okay. Funny because you got him watching us, and I'm like watching stuff.
Oh my gosh. Kind of,
all right, no. Shoulders.
Yeah.
I like mine.
I think you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
I like mine.
Okay, biceps and tries.
I go with me.
Yeah.
I go with me.
Yeah. Well, Sergio's good.
Sergio's was good, but like he didn't have like the striations and stuff. Like they were just like monstrous. I never really seen them like super shredded.
All right.
Like even mine, like now, like you can still see like the thinness of the skin and you can see the fibers and stuff. That's what I kind of look at because I'm like,
okay, so
I need to see like muscle per square inch.
I need to see that. You had that perfect skin.
Yeah, I got hooked up.
I mean, you got hooked up with that.
I got hooked up, man.
All right, forearms.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There was probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Go ahead and say you. It's fine.
Yeah, I got to be me.
Yeah, you. All right, traps. Yeah.
Traps? Ooh. I mean, you got like maybe Marcus Rhule.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he'd hit that most much. It's just like, yeah. Yeah, I'd like Rhule. Like, it was just, the traps were just stupid. Dexter actually had some good traps, though.
He did, though. His crab, yeah, he did.
Muscular for being as short and
what stocky. What about back?
Oof. Okay. I would say, see, you got me. Because people will say Ronnie, and I would say Ronnie. But then I look at mine, and although it wasn't as wide, it was as detailed.
Right.
The detail was there. I would give Ronnie the edge just because of back width. And people say Dorian, but I'd say, okay, I'm in top three, no problem with that. Like, if someone wanted Dorian, let's say, I think Ronnie's back, I would choose his over Dorian's. I'll catch flack for that. I don't care. I'm 7-time.
Yeah, bro, you get past all that, man. Just so say, you don't have to worry about what anybody says.
So I think Ronnie, when he would hit that back last pretty, just like, that's a game changer. I think the back double bicep was good, but like, I think where I sit, I'm like, early in his career, like let's say 98, 99,
yeah,
was like perfect. I think maybe later on it was a little watery, but people were just so amazed by how huge he was, it didn't really matter.
Oh.
But the crisp of 99, Ronnie Coleman, that beats Dorian, and that probably even beats me. I wouldn't say by a lot, but like I'd say it was right there. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah,
someone needs to do like an avatar of mixing.
Thanks for doing that for me, man. I was just always curious because
it's one of those things where I think like the ultimate pose down. You know, it's like, who I'd want to go against, I'd want to go against Ronnie and I'd want to go against Dorian, just settle it. Like in their prime, like I'd just be like none of this like comparing videos and all this other stuff, because you got like videos that were taken out, you know, using a different type of camcorder than today's camcorder. It was high sharpening, even on magazines back then. Then you have like certain filters that they use today. I would love to have gone against a Dorian and a Ronnie, and I know that I belong in that. And that was the best compliment I've received was from Ronnie, when people would just randomly roll up on him and be like, who do you think could compete with you? Like back in like your time, and you know, they throw my name in there and they're like, oh yeah, he'd do damage, but like none of the other guys like today would. So it's like, it's cool to have like a legend recognize you, because you do want that respect, and I always give it back. But yeah, a real cool virtual pose down. Yeah, throw Arnold in there, Lee Haney, myself, Dorian, and Coleman. I mean, you could throw Jay in there too, you know. I mean, could you imagine? Like, the crowd would just go,
bro,
stupid. That lineup.
Who's your favorite all time?
I'm biased because I saw Ronnie.
Yeah.
I saw Ronnie win number 8. And also I saw when he lost to Jay. That was the first time they did a 2-day comp. And that was the year he came out with the tablets as Moses.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh my gosh.
That's right.
So I think if his strategy was different, like he looked better on Saturday than he did on Friday.
Yeah.
But injuries caught him, just like it caught Jay, it caught me. But yeah, that was my favorite of watching Coleman on that Saturday. It was just so, he was like, thou shalt not drink water. You know, like it was just like crazy shredded.
Who's the most underrated?
Most underrated would be, I mean, you got to throw Lee Haney in there, I think, because he did go against some really good bodybuilders. He doesn't get mentioned a whole lot. I think that would be the only one, because I think they all kind of fit where they need to. I mean, hell, shoot, I still think I get underrated sometimes, you know, to be quite honest. You see different polls and stuff. You're like, huh, that's interesting. Did you guys take into account that I won a 2-day show? And it, like, and then they realize that they're like, that's why since you lost, there's been 6 Mr. Olympias. I'm like, yeah, in like a short period of time, because it's that freaking hard.
Keeps changing now.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can't. I mean, it's just that hard.
Yeah.
I think that's why now I'm able to recognize like how hard it really was, like how significant to hold it that long. But yeah, most underrated, I'd say. Oh, man, I mean, I'd go with Lee, because I don't think like the young guys coming up realize like that physique was dangerous, yeah. And it was on ESPN back then. Like right. He was representing a whole entire world of bodybuilding.
So. You've accomplished more than, I mean, obviously 7-time Olympian. It's crazy. What are you doing now with that? What's your future look like?
Future looks like this. Still traveling, doing speeches. I do some performance coaching, but also I just launched my 7X Labs supplement line. I will be sending a care package to you guys. And we do have stuff for women as well, because my wife helped formulate some of the products. So we have that. That's a heavy lift, no pun intended, because we really were intentionally focused on making sure that we take our time, get the right manufacturer, the right ingredients. And just, you know, I'm 45 and I want to make sure that I'm staying in shape, staying healthy, and wanting to have those. You know, I always believe your proof is in your performance. So that's our motto with 7X, is to make sure that when you take this, it's going to give you what you need to perform at your best.
Right.
So we have that. You know, I'm still running collaborations with Panada Fitness, which is an equipment company out of Apiro, Italy. I haven't announced this, but we are doing a collaboration together. So looking forward to sharing those pieces of equipment. We have a large following, obviously, in the Middle East. So I do a lot of work out there. But I'm getting ready to do some gyms. So first, I'll be starting with my own. As I think I told you, we're moving to Austin.
Austin, yeah.
So we're moving in to Austin at the end of this year. I'm looking to do like my own.
Pretty stoked about that, actually, having you here.
Me too, man. Yeah, I'm really excited about it. So having that, I want my own quote-unquote Iron Paradise, you know, where I can just get down. And if I have friends that are in town, I'm like, don't even bother. Like, come here. No cameras, no nothing. Whatever you want to do, just have fun. But then also get into the actual gym business. I look at opening up business gyms around the country. That's slowly in the works, but it is real. And I'm very excited to be able to tie in not just my nutrition products, but also the equipment that I'm doing, and then having the relationships with people that know how to truly operate that business, and then offering it up to making it a franchise, so then I can have these gyms all throughout the world. So I have those favorite destination spots like we were talking about before, you know, being in Dubai, the UAE, you know, Qatar, Oman, you know, Bahrain, like all those places, all these emerging markets, even in Saudi. We went to Riyadh and in Jeddah last year. They are just now having physical fitness become a priority in youth sports. So it's a great time. So we have that going on and a few other things. Oh, and gosh, my Gifted Athletics clothing line will be relaunching prior to the Olympia this year. And most importantly, spending quality time with my wife, who travels and works with me on all projects, and trying to start to have a family. That's the biggest thing, because I know that there was always that one box unchecked, and that was us both taking a step back from all this business stuff and getting down to real business and really, you know, having that legacy. I believe that we both, my wife, I give her a ton of credit, because, you know, she stuck with me. I mean, we've been together about 11 years, and she just knows my heart, and she just loves me for Phil. Mm. And she was the one that really got me back to God. And she's like, Phil, like, you have such influence, but if you just added that, how I would be a better supportive wife to you, a partner in business, how you would be able to just garner the strength
and take that influence that I've been so fortunate to have and to share and to help. She was like, your nickname, The Gift. Like, what a better way to do that by honoring God and just learning more about that.
Right.
And understanding, like, you know, I deal with a lot of, I would deal with performance anxiety and perfectionism. And that was because I was always performing for love as a kid, trying to get noticed by my parents and stuff like that. Trying to get the playing time in college, stuff like that. Going into bodybuilding, which is huge, you know, talking about performance, right? Look at me, like I'm doing work. I was able to use that, but now it's like, no, I don't have to have perfectionism. I need to have just core values first. The goals will come later because those goals, and I just learned this recently. I was like, wait a minute. I've been focusing so much on goals. You hit these goals, but you have no identity once those goals are finished.
Yeah.
You don't know who the hell you are. I don't know if you've had that, you know, being on teams and stuff like that, but I know I went through a very dark place when I finished competing in 2020. Worst. It was the worst thing. It was the worst depression. I thought the depression I had in college was bad.
No, man, that's the worst.
It was the worst. It was coming out of a pandemic and doing a show one last time. And even though I had a documentary being made, I just sit at a wall. I was just like stonewalled every day.
Yeah, man.
Wife like, what's wrong? And I'm like, nothing. And it was just bad. So like me getting broken down to my freaking knees and just saying like, look, I need help. Tears are here. I'm begging. I'll do whatever. I'll give up. I don't care about riches. I don't care about none of that. I just need peace. I need to figure this stuff out.
Peace and purpose.
I just need to understand what my next journey is. And, you know, so far it's been really, really cool. You know,
you'll know when it comes on because that flame will rekindle.
Yeah.
And it starts to build back up again, but it feels better.
Yeah.
Because when we leave the first life, because you put your heart and your soul into it,
mm-hmm.
that's why when we leave it rips your soul out. So you're kind of just sitting there empty. You don't have anything. That's what happens to us. You get that dead stare and people are like, what's wrong? We're like, well, nothing really, but something's missing.
Right.
Oh yeah, brother. I've been there with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's been, you know, my current path, and it's been enlightening, to be honest. You know, it's like I wake up in more gratitude and just looking at life for what it is. It's like, man, I woke up this morning. I was like, man, I get to meet you guys. Like, I get to meet up and we get to hang. We get to vibe out. And it's been a great chat. I really appreciate you guys taking out the time because I know you guys got to travel.
God bless
and stuff.
You. Thanks for coming out here.
No, God bless you too, guys. And looking forward to, you know, hanging out more, you know, especially when we move.
Yes.
As soon as you get to Austin, man.
Yeah. Yes. We'll come see you.
I love that.
When I can tell you when Marcus, he went through a really rough time after he got out of the teams. And the one thing that put him back on track is his relationship with God.
Yeah.
And when he squared that away, like mm-hmm. that was a battle within himself, but when he squared that away, everything else fell in line. Like,
yeah.
Not that anything was bad before, but like marriage got better,
yeah.
family life got better, everything just fell into place.
There's a huge difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're without it.
100%.
Well, we can run on that on your internal battery band, yeah. but once you burn that out, then what do you got? And then once I got put back on track, like I had to kind of come to Jesus talk, jerked mm-hmm. a knot in my ass.
Yeah.
Freaking hardcore.
For real. And I even went as far as like doing freaking plant medicine. I did toad, and I remember doing that. I was like, all right, I see certain things, but all it led me to is just the book.
Mm-hmm. Same. Which was, we did that's it
same thing
too.
With me.
For sure. I was like, all right, so I did like all these journeys. I'm like,
the five jerked a knot in my ass.
Yeah.
Dude, those journeys whooped me.
I did it Bro. Too. Yeah.
I did toad. My wife was like holding space for me and stuff. And she was like, Phil, like you were like shaking and like, you're all like you're crying and like this and that. Yeah, and I'm like outside, like I had to go outside and like be in the earth. And I'm right. like, whoa, like the moon is like coming. I was like, I'm talking to trees. I'm like seeing everything. But you know what? It's like I had a rebirth. Like I had to feel everything. Like I get to hear things that my parents were saying. Like it kind of just
tunes that radio.
Yeah, and just tuned me up. I was like, all right, well, I'll share this. I remember and he did it very slow, thank God, because he didn't just blast me.
Yeah, that's the worst.
So so you know, you blast off and I see my body, like I see my wife and my guy that was there, and I'm like, oh wow, I'm not in my body. And the only thing I thought about was like, I'm going to miss my wife. And that my job was not finished. Like, I didn't accomplish the things that I had wanted to do. And I was like, boom. And then I'll fast forward. So, like, I'm going through, like, this jungle and stuff, and I'm, like, thinking, oh, I can dream my way through this. Like, I can dream of, like, a machete, and I can get through this wall of, like, foliage. Nope. And I feel a hand that's pulling me through it. And I knew that was God.
Yeah.
And all I remember seeing is, like, I'm, like, standing on a cliff, and I'm seeing all this water and stuff, and I'm like, wow, that's so cool. Like, there's no people. Like, I'm just like, whoa. I see fish. I see this. I see, like, peace. And all I can hear is, like, this is yours. And it was like, boom, back to your body. And I was like, I ain't messing that up.
Right.
I am not messing this up. Like, I'm going to figure this out. Like, I understand that if he's telling me this, let me get my ass in that book right now. Like, let me create higher level of discernment. I am not perfect. I will make mistakes. But let me just be more in tune with that. Because, yeah, I've accomplished a whole lot that would be just for the world. But, yeah. Like, what can I leave? When you're gone, it's like, you ain't thinking about, that was the cool part, because I didn't think about, oh, Mr. Olympia. I didn't think about none of that. I was like, I just thought about my wife. That was it.
Yeah, that's what it did to me.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the most important thing that you need to focus on when you down there will appear the minute you get back. And it was.
Yeah.
And then the book.
That's it.
Sitting right there. I was like, oh, yeah, you're not blind. Yeah. You know, once you see it, you can't unsee it, right? You can't
unsee it.
So yeah. You're like, oh, okay. And then once I started, I'm the same way as you. Like, discipline kicks in. I'm like, well, all right, I'll get into it.
Yeah.
And then once it was like a baby step, just like lifting, right? Just kind of like grow with it.
Mm-hmm.
And every single day I work at it.
Yeah.
I still have the other stuff. I can feel it in there, but I have the capabilities of capturing it.
I love that part because I get like little bits of anxiety, like when I go to bodybuilding shows. And there's that part like, man, like I should be up there. Yeah, you know, I'm like itching.
Yeah.
And I just had to tell myself, I'm like, you've been there, done that, man. Just be proud that you did that.
Your legacy. And just
enjoy what you're seeing.
Because that's what people want. When you show up there now, they're like, I need you here.
Yeah.
You have a purpose there.
The hard part is that.
That'll never go away.
The fans are still like, you look so good.
So good. And you look
good enough. And some of them are like kind of upset. And it's probably like my diehard fans. That are
right,
like,
of course.
You can still do one more. Come on, man. I'm like. There's a bigger calling.
Yeah, man.
And I just want to serve, you know, and learn and really use my nickname as the gift and just give back, like promoting bodybuilding shows, meeting more people. Heck, I got to get back with the USO and do more appearances. I used to do stuff with them nonstop, you know, before COVID. And just, you know, like I have to tell you, like, I love you guys. Mm. Like, you guys are just so cool. But like your story, like, it was the coolest thing when I was at American Ballet and I saw you. I was like, I mean, all you guys are badasses, right? But I'm like, babe, it's the guy.
Yeah.
And she's like, I know. She's like, so you're just going to bro it up all night? You're just going to leave me here? And I was like, I think so. I think so, babe. Like,
we're used to that.
Yeah, right? Like, I think I am. And then I was like, even like when during the inauguration, I was like texting and I was like, we're so far away.
Yeah.
This is crap.
Well, now that you'll be in Austin, we'll get to see
you. Yeah, more. No, it's just great because as you get older, you just want to be around more like-minded people, people that have their stuff together and their priorities in the right places, right?
Not trying to cut you up.
Yeah.
Oof, that part.
They're just not trying to hurt you. So many people nowadays that just want to tear people down. Mm-hmm. And we have.
I'm so far past that.
We have zero interest. In you can tell ever men tearing anyone are, down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You get above that, mm-hmm. and then you can still look down in there and see them who True it that. Is and doing it. Yeah, but mm-hmm. it doesn't affect me.
Yeah, the gossip and the nonsense.
Yeah.
You can only tolerate it for so long. And then if you catch yourself like in those circles and you start to say something, it's like my wife will like pinch me or grab my hand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, it's time to go.
Yeah.
It's just, and it's respectful. It's just like, mm-hmm. she's like, babe, it's time.
That to makes go. You more powerful.
Yeah.
She's like, you that's, and so we'll like text each other. We're like, it's low level here.
Yeah.
It's just, that's kind of like one of the words we use, like low level. Yeah.
You can feel time, it when you walk time in the room.
To roll. You know, these aren't our people. And you know what? It doesn't mean that you're bad or whatever. Maybe you're a little bad, but like, I got to reserve my energy for this.
Yeah.
Like these conversations, like these memories that we can create than just dealing with, I hate to say it, but just a bunch of morons, a bunch of people that refuse to see things that the way they are. Like if, you know, I was telling one of my friends this the other day because he was like, what do you think is, we were talking like meaning of life and this and that. And I was like, all I know is this. It's a space shuttle. It's going to the moon and coming back. And you know what a space shuttle does when it hits the moon? Things fall off. And by the time it comes back, it's even smaller than where it started. That's how my life is probably going to be. Because in the end, it's only going to be these people that ride with me. So I got to enjoy the whole entire journey. It's all good. I'm going to different places, experiencing different things, but I can't, you know, you have like a friendship with a person, let's say for 15, 20 years and something happened, whether it be good or bad, I got to be okay with it because it was just an experience. I'm having a human experience and I don't want to latch myself onto something that ain't for me or for my wife because I got to be the protector of her too. And that's something that, you know, even recently I'm like, okay, I'm like, all right, you walk in this walk, bro. Like, you got to make sure, like I'll make sure my wife's good, but like, you got to really make sure because she's got your back, but you got to really make sure so then she can stay in that feminine energy all the time. You know, so where she doesn't have to feel like she's always got to, you know, be mama bear like all the time. Like, that puts a lot of stress on the shoulders and stuff. So, because she does travel with me, you know, she would actually be here, but I was like, babe, like, you got to go back home for Father's Day because her dad was in town in Michigan. I was like, yeah, like, they were watching the house. I'm like, just go back home. She's like, I want to kick it with you. Like, even this morning, she's like, I'd rather be there with you. I was like, I already know.
Aww.
We're two peas in a pod, you know. But
I love that.
Yeah, she's my best friend, you know. Aww. For real. Like, I tell my boys, I'm like, we can do, like, so-called guys night, but she's going to be, like, right down the road or, you know what I mean? Like, if we're having cigars or, like, having beer or something like that, I'm like, she's probably going to come.
Yeah.
Might as well bring your wife too.
Marcus comes on our girls' trips. We have girls' trips with my cousins, my sisters, everybody.
I can't believe you just told the world that.
Yeah, but Marcus comes. We call him security.
I was going to say, badass security.
We call him security, but I'm like,
they actually have a great time when all they go out too. That's cool. They go to nice restaurants and freaking, it's pretty cool.
Maybe who knows? Maybe one day I just roll up with you.
Yeah, come on, bring your wife.
Have all room. It's great, man.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for taking the time to come out here. We really appreciate you sharing your story.
That was great, man.
Yeah, no, thank you guys. This has been, it's an honor, seriously, just to be here, to be able to be in your home, and man, what a legacy you both have, you know, created that you still continue to create, and I just really appreciate it, appreciate the hospitality as well, signing your guest book, and just all that you guys continue to do, like, however I can be of support, please let me know, do not hesitate, like,
thank you.
You have a friend in me, that's for sure.
Oh, we got fun as soon as you get to Texas.
Yeah.
It's on. All right, brother.
Yep. All right.